In the Vatican on Friday, the Pontifical Council for Culture was into the second day of its plenary assembly. Being discussed are issues surrounding the theme of the Church and the challenge of secularisation. Among the speakers who've reached Rome for the occasion is one of the British-based advisers to this council. He's Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, who in the afternoon spoke of pastoral perspectives for the evangelisation of culture in Europe. I sat down with him for a moment. Pastoral perspectives for the evangelisation of culture in Europe. Now, there are a lot of different words there. To start with, culture. How does one define culture?
Well, I suppose on the written version of the talk, the first paragraph, which I'm going to omit in the meeting, is a humorous introduction to the complexity of Europe, whereas bishops in other continents can use one or maximum two languages for their continental meetings. Meetings in Europe are dreadfully complex, and that goes for the Vatican too, and the price of translations is astronomical. I think cultures are used very often as flags of identity, and in Europe we've got that strange tendency to resist uniformity and unity of that kind because it smacks of something imposed from above. So you have to be very respectful of people's different traditions, people's different aspirations and the presuppositions of their lives and all sorts of things, which to them are very precious. Well, to us are very precious.
So culture in Europe... Europe does have a centuries-old Christian heritage, no? Therefore, culture in Europe is imbued with Christianity, isn't it?
That's true, but I think the way Christianity is lived depends on where you happen to have been born. The divisions of Europe after the Reformation are, in one sense, looking at them historically, a scandal, but looking at them in terms of experience. If you, as a young English boy, come to seminary in Rome, as I did, you're very surprised how many buses and trains there are on a Sunday, because we live in a Puritan culture in England. People wouldn't like to hear that, but it is. It's dominated by Puritanism. When I was young, there were no shops open on Sundays. You weren't supposed to whistle on a Sunday. You certainly didn't do washing or anything like that on a Sunday. But in Mediterranean Europe, which is largely Catholic, festive days, like Sundays and holy days, are feasts that you enjoy yourself. And the public services are adapted to that, at least they used to be. I'm not so sure anymore. But there are big divisions like that, how you view leisure, how you view fun. Carnival here is very different from what it is in the north of Europe and doesn't really exist in England. So there are many different ways culture is linked to Christianity, depending where you live. And then in all the Orthodox countries, it's very different again. From where I live, either in Rome or in Switzerland or in England, they're the places I've lived. And then if you go to Scandinavia, the coldness of Lutheran and Calvinist religion really strikes you very hard, even in Scotland, for example.
And beyond that, you have all the rapidly changing society with... which has become increasingly multicultural, no?
Well, whatever that means, multicultural is an easy word to say. If it's a fact that there are many cultures living together, that's okay. But once you speak of multiculturalism, it's no longer a fact, it's a prescription. It's a theory, it's an ideal. And I'm not sure that's an ideal that it can be achieved as easily as some people would have to have us believe. I think the differences have to be more respected and accepted than minimised.
I asked you this at the beginning. You didn't really, in my opinion, reply. What is culture? I mean, culture is cooking, it's reading, it's football, it's a bit of everything, isn't it? It's basically, perhaps, a way to discuss basic human values, a key to dialogue, no?
I once suggested to my former archbishop that culture is the way we do things around here. And he adopted that expression as if it was his own idea. And I think it is. Culture is the badge of our identity, and I did say that before. It's the way we see the world, the way our traditions have moulded our reaction to the world around us, the way we interact. There are all sorts of conventions and traditions, most of them unwritten, which form our identity, the things which we recognise. Actually, it's very curious in England. It's far harder to get people to enumerate what makes them English than it is, for example, to get Welsh people to say what makes them Welsh, Scottish people, what makes them Scottish, and so on. England has been so populated by people from so many parts of the globe for so long now that we, in many ways, find it hard to put our finger on exactly what makes us English. But people outside seem to recognise us much better than we do ourselves. And the culture is the way we interact with each other, with the world, and with people from other parts of the world, which does make us a distinctive kind of person or group. The culture is built up out of core beliefs, practices, rituals, traditions, and things like that.
Your talk is from a pastoral perspective, no? You are at present representing Catholic culture at the European capital of culture, no? You're also a parish priest. Obviously, there's two different areas there. What's the difference between just being an ordinary layperson or being Catholic in a parish? Is there a difference?
Well, I think a lot of people get tricked by the word culture into thinking it's high culture. That's a very elitist, classical notion of culture, which is being well-educated, having been taught to appreciate the fine arts and so on. There is a much more, what they technically call, anthropological understanding of culture, which is simply related to what I was talking about before, the ways a society articulates itself, how it organises its life, its core beliefs and so on and so forth. If you know the Liverpool area, where Liverpool is the capital of European culture this year, you would be blind, deaf and culpably ignorant if you didn't see the effect Christianity has had on that area, and particularly, much to the dismay of other Christians, how strong Catholicism has been in the past. It still is, but not in the way a lot of people would like. But Catholicism, the Catholic Church and its various works, mainly missionary work, work for the poor, education, service in hospitals and things like that. There are so many marks of the Catholic Church in our past and also in our present that with the bishops of Liverpool and the small committee, we decided to celebrate the past and to highlight what's going on in the present in order to leave for the future some kind of clearer awareness, both a pride on one level, but much more important than that, a commitment to the continued effective presence of the Catholic Church in our city. For example, mixing many notions of culture, you can see that the work one of our priests does with a group of helpers for asylum seekers has made a tremendous difference to the way they live and survive in our city and the area around the city. Because without his help, without his initiative, which is all based on what he has been as a priest for the last 40 years, those people would be literally in a mess. They would have nobody else to turn to. And his witness and the work he does with his team is a gem in the presence of the Catholic Church at the moment. At a different level of culture, we also have a fantastic musical tradition in our area, particularly in the cathedral, but not only there. And that contributes to a part of Liverpool life that many know through such different music as that of the Beatles and many of those groups from the 1960s. But even church music has a special tradition on Merseyside, and that's something we want to celebrate with, for example, a thing called 2,000 Voices Praising God, which will take place in the cathedral in November, when we're just going to get 2,008 people. First of all, people from our schools, and then in the evening, the same number, adults or whoever wants to come. And twice we'll have this event on the same day, as I say, once for schools, once for other people. Just to get people singing, and to be happy singing Christian music in a beautiful church setting. It isn't a performance, it's an experience. And that will be a remarkable day and a remarkable evening.
Getting back to your work as a parish priest, which we haven't really spoken about, how do you touch the hearts and minds of children in your parish with the future generations?
I'm still very new. I think the biggest job in one of the two parishes I have is to make sure the atmosphere in church is that of a church. Because it's a very modern building, which is ugly to anyone's standards. But as a liturgical building, it works very well. The other church I have is very traditional. But to contact people and to get any reaction out of them is like talking to, I hope none of them are listening to this, like talking to rows of sardines. Just sitting there all looking the same, and you very rarely get a reaction. In both parishes, however, there's an initiative known as Little Church. The children are taken out of the Sunday morning Mass for their own liturgy of the word, and a very committed group of parents and helpers regularly catechise them in that setting. And in both parishes it's done very well. In one there's about 60 children, and in the other one maybe 40. So every week 100 children in my two parishes are being given special and well-prepared catechesis on the gospel and the theme of the day. That's one way of informing them and giving them a way of being comfortable with the church, with God and so on. But I think there's still a long way to go in terms of helping them to be actually aware in their ordinary lives that God is there, that God is love and not the policeman. Very often parents manage to convey to their children their own fears and images from their youth, but we've got a long way to go to make people really aware of the presence of God in the whole world, and not just in nature and nice days and parties, but even in suffering and in the ordinary jobs we do, and so that we're aware of God in so many different ways. In my talk here, I think I'm just giving certain aspects of the pedagogical side of evangelizing, ways of forming people and helping them form themselves in an appreciation that God is everywhere and God is in everything and in everyone, and that they should never feel far from God, that there's a lot more to learn about God. It's not just learnt with the head, it's learnt with the heart, and learnt in action, reacting and interacting with people, with nature, with all sorts of things. I'm not a pantheist, by the way. I'm very clear on what I believe about God. But I think we've got a lot to do and a long way to go with children. I have, I think, 7 schools in the area of my two parishes. We hardly see any of the children in church at Sundays. So there's work to be done even there. I fear that what they get in the schools is very much secularized, in the sense that it's presented as an option among many options, even though they're in Catholic schools. And it's presented by people who are not themselves practicing anyway. And it's presented apologetically in the wrong sense. People apologising that they're Christians, and, you know, we've got to do religious education, so just put up with it, is the atmosphere in many cases. And I think we've got a long way to go there. And that reflects also on the way we recruit people, the preparation we give to religion teachers, what we expect of head teachers and of people working in Catholic schools. It's a very complex issue. So there are many levels on which one answers the question, what are you going to do for children in your parish?
A big thank you once again to Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, advisor to the Pontifical Council for Culture, currently holding its plenary assembly. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.